They were silent. "You are suggesting," asked Judah, Leah's son, in a slightly unsteady voice, "your words mean that we have taken a dish from your master's table and made off with it like thieves? Unfortunately, there is no other name for your behavior. The thing is gone since yesterday. Obviously, it has been bagged. Who can have done it? There is only one answer, alas. I can only repeat that you men have done very ill and are in a very serious case." They were silent again, with their arms akimbo, puffing and blowing. "Listen, my dear sir," said Judah. "How would it be if you gave heed to your words and considered before you spoke? The thing is unheard of. We ask you in all politeness, but in all seriousness as well, what do you take us for? Do we look to you like vagabonds and thieves? Or what sort of impression may you have of us that you try to make it appear that we have taken a valuable piece from your master's table, a cup apparently, and been light-fingered with it? That is what I mean when I say unheard of, speaking in the name of all 11 of us. For we are all faithfully sons of one man, and our whole number was 12. One is no longer with us, otherwise I would call it unheard of in his name as well. You say we have done ill. Well, I do not claim that we brothers are saints, having never done ill, but come through the rough and tumble of life without ever taking a fall. I do not say we are innocents, that would be sacrilege. But there is guilt and guilt, and maybe guilt is prouder than innocence is. Anyhow, to nab silver cups is not in our line. We have cleared ourselves before your master, and showed him that we walk in truth by bringing our 11th brother to witness. We have cleared ourselves before you, for the purchase money we found in our feed bags we brought back out of the land of Canaan, and offered it to you again, but you would not take it. After these experiences, will you not stop and consider before you accuse us of taking silver or gold from your master's table?" But Reuben was boiling over. He spurted out, "Why do you not answer, steward, this convincing speech of my brother Jehuda? And why do you bite deeper in the corner of your mouth in that offensive way? Here we are, search us. And with whomever it is found, your wretched silver cup, let him die. Search. If you find it, the rest of us, all of us, will be your slaves for life." "Reuben," said Judah, "do not burst out like that. Our complete innocence needs not such oaths." And Maisachme spoke. "You are right. There is no need of hasty words. We too know how to be moderate. He in whose sack we find the cup, he becomes our slave and remains in our hands. The rest of you will go free. Be pleased to open your sacks." They were already at it. They had run to their sacks. They could not take them down fast enough from their asses and tear them open. "Laban," they cried with laughter. "Laban, searching on the Mount of Gilead. Ha ha! Let him sweat and swear. Here, Master Steward, come and search mine first." "Quietly, quietly," said Maisachme. "Everything in order and in turn, the way my master knew your names. We will begin with the big hothead." As he searched, they mocked, their triumph mounting as he went on. They called him Laban, and jeered at him for a sweating clod, as he moved from sack to sack, stooped and looked with his hands on his hips, shook his head, and shrugged his shoulders, then went on to the next. He searched Asher and Issachar, and came to Zebulun. Nothing there. He was almost at the end of his search. Only Benjamin was left. They jeered yet more loudly. "Now he is looking in Benjamin's," they cried. "What luck with the most innocent of all, not only in this but in all other respects, for he has never done ill in his life. Watch how he searches in the last bag. Listen to what he will say next to justify—" All at once they were still. They saw it shining in the steward's hand. Out of Benjamin's feed bag, from not very far down, he had drawn the silver cup. "Here it is," he said, "found in the youngest sack. I should have begun at the other end and spared myself trouble and abuse. So young and already so thievish. Of course I am glad to have found the cup, but my pleasure is marred by the knowledge of such early corruption and ingratitude. Young one, you are in a bad fix." And the others? They held their heads, staring at the cup till their eyes bulged out. They whistled through lips so puffed out that they could not speak but only whistle.
Benoni!
They cried, their voices shrill to breaking. Defend yourself! Open your mouth! How did you come by the cup? But Benjamin was silent. He dropped his chin on his chest so that no one could see his eyes, and was dumb. They tore their clothing. Some of them actually seized the hem of their smocks and with one pull rent them from bottom to top.
We are shamed, they wailed, shamed by our youngest. Benjamin, for the last time, open your mouth and justify yourself.
But Benjamin was silent. He did not lift his head. He spoke no word. His silence was quite impossible to describe.
He did cry out at first, shouted Bilhah's Dan. Now I remember he gave a great cry when this man came up. Terror tore the shriek out of him. He knew why the man came after us.
Then they fell on Benjamin with loud railing and reviling, and called him a thief and the son of a thief, reminding him how his mother had stolen her father's teraphim.
It is inherited. He has it in his blood. Oh, thief's blood! Did you have to apply your inheritance just here, to bring us all to shame with you, us and our whole stock, the father and all of us and our children?
Now you are exaggerating, cried Maisakme. That is not our way. The rest of you are all cleared and free. We do not assume your guilt, but rather that your youngest stole on his own account. You can freely go home to your honorable father. Only he who took the cup, he falls to us. But Judah answered him,
There can be no talk of that, steward, for I will speak with your master. He shall hear the words of Judah. I am resolved upon it. We all go back with you before his face, and he shall judge us all, for we are all liable in this matter, and are as one with respect to what has happened. Lo, our youngest was innocent all his years, for he was at home, but we others were out in the world and became guilty. We are not minded to play the guiltless and leave him in the lurch because he became guilty on his travels while we in this one respect are innocent. Up with us all. Lead us together with him before the throne of the keeper of the market.
Be it so, said Maisakme. As you will. So they went back to the city, surrounded with the troop of lancers, taking the road they had lately covered so free from care. But Benjamin said no word.
I am he.
It was already the latter part of the afternoon when they came before Joseph's house, for the steward led them thither and not to the great office where they had first bowed and bent their knees. Joseph was not there. He was in his own house. He was yet there, the story says, and it is correct. After the merry meeting of the day before, Pharaoh's friend had gone back to his office, but today he could not have left his house. He knew that his steward was at his task, and he waited with extreme impatience. The feast was nearing its climax, and it rested with the ten whether they would be on the scene or only hear what happened at second hand. Would they make the youngest come back alone with Maisakme, or would they all stick together? Joseph's suspense was great. On this point depended his future relations with the brothers. We, of course, are in no suspense. In the first place, we know all the phases of the story by heart. Moreover, we have just been present at the search for the cup, and have seen that the brothers did not forsake Benjamin in his guilt, whereas the fact was still hidden from Joseph. So, in our wisdom, we may smile at him as he wandered up and down and to and fro, from the book room to the reception hall, thence to the banqueting hall, back through all the rooms into his sleeping chamber, where he feverishly gave this or that last touch to his toilette, like an actor nervously adjusting his makeup before the curtain goes up. He went to see his wife Asenath in the women's quarters. They sat together watching Manasseh and Ephraim at their play, and he could not disguise his stage fright.
"My husband and dear lord," said she, "what is the matter? You are nervous. You keep shuffling your feet and listening for something. What have you on your mind? Shall we have a game to divert you, or shall some of my women dance before you?"
"No, my girl," he replied. "Thank you, not now. I have other moves in my head from those in the game, and I cannot watch the dancing. I have too much jigging and juggling to do myself, while God and the world look on.
I must get back nearer to the hall. That is the theater. But for your maids, I know a better task than dancing, for I came to tell them to make you beautiful even beyond your beauty, and dress and adorn you. And the nurses must wash Manasseh's and Ephraim's hands and put on their embroidered smocks, for I am expecting very special guests, and will present you all as my family so soon as the word has been spoken, and they know who I am and whose you are. Yes, you are making big eyes, my shield made with the tiny waist, but just do as I say, and make yourselves fine, and you shall hear from me.
With that, he was off again into the other part of the house. He would gladly have luxuriated in pure waiting and the pleasure of suspense, but as always there was business to transact, officials to see, accounts and papers to examine and sign, brought to him in his bookroom by his reader and his acting scribe. He cursed them mentally, yet welcomed them for their company, too. The sun declined as he sat over his papers, with one ear cocked. At last, he heard a confusion of sounds in front of the house. The hour had come. The brothers were here. Mysakme entered, the corner of his mouth drawn tighter than ever, the cup in his hand. He handed it to his master. "The youngest had it," said he, "after a long search. They are in the hall awaiting your sentence."
"All of them?" Joseph asked.
"All of them," Mysakme replied.
"You see that I am busy," said Joseph. "These gentlemen here are not here for fun. We are occupied with the business of the crown. You have been my steward long enough to know whether I can take time from pressing official business for such petty matters. You and your men can wait."
And he bent again over the roll held open for him by an official. But as he could see nothing that was written there, he said, after a pause,
"We might as well get that little matter over with first. It is a case of criminal ingratitude, and I must pass judgment. Gentlemen, follow me to the hall, where the evil-doers are awaiting sentence."
They attended him as he went up three steps and through a hanging out onto the raised dais of the hall, where stood his chair. With the cup in his hand, he sat down. Servants straightway held fans over his head, for he was always thus protected the moment he sat down. A slanting ray full of dancing motes shone from one of the left-hand upper openings between the columns and the sphinxes and the red sandstone crouching lions with pharaoh heads. It fell upon the group of sinners who had flung themselves down a few paces from Joseph's chair with their foreheads to the ground. Spears guarded them on either side. A host of the curious, cooks and waiting boys, sprinklers and flower-table stewards, crowded round the doors.
"Brothers, stand up," said Joseph. "I should not have thought to see you again, and on such an occasion. But there are many things I should not have thought. I should not have thought you could do as you have done, when I had treated you like gentlemen. I am glad, of course, to have my cup back again, out of which I drink, and from which I divine. But I am greatly cast down by your gross behavior. It is incomprehensible to me. How could you bring yourselves so crudely to repay good with evil, to offend a man like me by taking away something he is fond of and which is useful to him? The deed was as stupid as it was hateful, and you might have guessed that a man like me would miss so valuable a piece at once and know everything. Did you imagine that when I saw I had been robbed, I could not divine where it had gone? And now I assume that you have admitted your guilt."
It was Judah who answered. He became the spokesman for them all this day, for he had passed through trials in life which they had been spared. He had familiar knowledge of sin and guilt, and therefore he could fitly represent the brothers. On their way back to Menphis, this had been settled among them, and he had considered what to say. Now, with his garments rent, he stood among his brothers and spoke. "What shall we say unto my lord? And what sense would there be in trying to clear ourselves before him? We are guilty before you, O Lord, guilty in the sense that your cup was found among us, with one of us, and that means with all. How the cup came into the sack of the youngest and most innocent of us all, who was always safe at home, I do not know. We do not know.
We are powerless to speculate about it before your seat. You are a mighty one of earth. You are good and evil. You raise up and cast down. We are your servants. No defense of ours has any worth before you, and foolish is the sinner who presumes upon present innocence when the avenger demands pay for all misdeeds. Not for nothing did our old father lament that we would make him childless in his old age. Lo, he was right. We and he with whom the cup was found are fallen to my lord as slaves. In this opening speech of Judah's, which was not yet the one for which he is famous, there were points which Joseph preferred to ignore. He therefore answered only the one touching on their slavery, to reject it. No, not so, he said. Far from it. There is no behavior so bad that it can make a man like me behave inhumanly. You have bought food for the old man your father in the land of Egypt, and he is waiting for it. I am Pharaoh's great man of business. No one shall say I took advantage of your crime to keep the money, the goods, and the buyers too. Whether only one of you sinned or all of you together, I will not inquire. To your youngest I talked familiarly at table. We were merry together, and I told him the virtues of my beloved cup, and by its means showed him his mother's grave. It may be he prattled to you about it, and all of you concerted the ungrateful plot of stealing the treasure. I assume it was not for the sake of the silver you took it. You wanted to use its magic for yourselves, perhaps to find out what became of your missing brother, the one who left home. How can I tell? But again, maybe your youngest committed the crime on his own, told you nothing, and took the cup. I do not wish to hear. The booty was found with the thief. He shall be my servant, but the rest of you may go home in peace to your father, the old man, that he may not be childless, and may have food to eat.